A few things before we get into this week's episode. First, we'd like to ask that you stay tuned to the end to hear a trailer for our friend Cece's podcast, Sooner State True Crime, which covers cases from our neighbor to the north, the state of Oklahoma. Next, you might notice that this episode is shorter than usual. There's a reason. The case we're covering here, much like the episode about the slaying of Doris Rivers a couple back, is heavily lacking in available information. There was little media coverage at the time the murder occurred, and even less has come since. We've had this and other cases on the back burner for a while, searching for and requesting information, but to no avail. The case of Jacqueline Graham is just as important as any other unsolved murder case, though, and her story should be told. What I'm getting at is, here and there, we'll be attempting to bring stories to light that contain less information and facts than what you're used to hearing on Gone Cold. These are important cases, and we don't want to leave them out simply because the press decided to. Jacqueline's case, too, was a listener suggestion, and I'd like to thank that listener for bringing it to our attention. I'd also like to remind y'all that you can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and $2.50 a month gives you access to Patreon-exclusive episodes that cover mostly solved crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. It's a huge help with the costs associated with producing the show, and Erica and I appreciate it beyond words. Again, please stick around to the end for a trailer of Sooner State True Crime. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
At 8:15 on the morning of Friday, April 8, 1988, at an Academy sporting goods store in North Houston, off FM 1960, a truck driver unloaded merchandise from his rig into the back storeroom. Out of the corner of his eye, he spotted something out of place. What appeared to be a mannequin was lying in a driveway that led to the loading docks. Where the mannequin laid was unusual, but considering that the Academy store displayed clothes on them, maybe the item had been faulty and was meant to be discarded, he thought, or perhaps its placement there was at the hands of the store's resident prankster. The trucker called out to the manager on duty, telling him what he saw, and the two men walked over to check it out. As they approached, they quickly realized that what they found wasn't a dummy at all. Instead, what they discovered was appalling, a sight that was unimaginable and ghastly. It was the bloody and mutilated body of a young woman. Jacqueline Michelle Graham was born on September 7, 1968, and graduated high school with honors in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She'd been sent to Baton Rouge to complete high school, presumably, after getting into some trouble with the law back at home. About 6 months before her 18th birthday, Jacqueline was arrested in Houston alongside her boyfriend, Joseph, for possession and delivery of the controlled substance cocaine. Both Jacqueline and Joseph were sentenced to serve time in a Huntsville prison, but instead of throwing away the key or making an example of the misguided youths, the judge handed down the punishment with a particular goal in mind. It was so-called shock probation, a punishment sometimes given to offenders who are deemed by a judge to be easily rehabilitated. If the offender sees the repercussions of their crimes, the theory goes, after having been subjected to incarceration for a period long enough to put the fear of the law into them, but not long enough to harden them, so to speak, they'll be scared straight. After serving her brief stint in Huntsville, she and Joseph were given 5 years probation, and after graduating school over in Baton Rouge, Jacqueline moved back with her family in Houston. The shock probation apparently worked, and the young woman enrolled at North Harris County College, where she majored in interior design. That was in the past, Jacqueline's mother Pam said of her arrest. We had no problems with her. She was on the right track, going to school and working, and she didn't have anything to do with drugs now. We were with her enough to know. We were a happy family together. We love each other very much. She wasn't in any trouble. She was a good kid, and she was really getting her life in good order. We were so proud of her. Jacqueline was working at Sears in the Willowbrook Mall in Northwest Houston. By 1988, Jacqueline was still in school, too. She and Joseph, who was also staying out of trouble after their 1986 drug arrest, were constantly on and off again. Jacqueline had been living with him for a while before they broke up in March of 88, and she moved into a garage apartment in Spring, a North Houston suburban development. After the breakup, she began spending a lot of time with her family at their home. On Thursday, April 7th, 1988, Jacqueline was at her family's house in Houston. After staying and chatting with them for several hours, she left to return to her apartment to get ready for dinner with a friend.
Be careful when you go out, Jacqueline's mother, Pam, said to her.
Pam had no way of knowing then that those would be the last words she ever spoke to her daughter. After spending several hours at her mother's Houston home on April 7th, 1988, Jacqueline Graham left, returning to her apartment so that she could get ready for an evening out. Jacqueline then drove to her friend's house, located in the Northwest Houston Steeplechase development, where the two finished getting ready. They left and arrived at the 6th Avenue Club, near West Little York Road and Highway 6, shortly thereafter. Joseph, Jacqueline's ex, was also at the club, and at some point that night, the two were seen having an argument. The nature of that argument isn't clear, nor is its level of severity. Sometime after midnight, now Friday, April 8, 1988, Jacqueline left the bar. Though the tragic outcome is known, the events that occurred between the time Jacqueline left the 6th Avenue Club and 8:15 later that morning remain a mystery to this day. It was then that a truck driver noticed what he thought was a mannequin laying in a driveway leading to the loading dock behind Academy Sporting Goods store as he unloaded merchandise there. After informing a manager, the two men walked over to inspect what was seen, only to be horrified that what lay there was, in fact, a young woman's body, bloody and savagely mutilated. The sprawled body was laying face down on the drive, clad in only a bra and a blouse that was pulled up over the young woman's chest. Law enforcement, of course, was alerted immediately. The word mutilation is, perhaps, sometimes used loosely, and since it might be subjective opinion or analysis by the investigators or medical examiner working a particular case, the folks who see the scene and the body, it's often difficult to make sense of what mutilated means. When the results of this young woman's autopsy were reported, however, there could be no argument against authorities using the term. She suffered 2 gunshot wounds to her back, 8 stab wounds to the chest, and she'd been slashed over 20 times. It was later reported, in fact, that she'd suffered up to 50 knife wounds in total. The young woman had endured what the medical examiner called sexual mutilation, though exactly just what he meant was never expounded upon. As if these findings weren't enough, it was also determined that the young woman had been run over and dragged by an automobile repeatedly. A Harris County Sheriff's Office homicide lieutenant who was among those on the scene, Drew Warren, remarked that it appeared the young woman had been killed elsewhere and dumped behind the sporting goods store,
as her wounds suggested there would undoubtedly be a bloodbath wherever the fatal injuries were inflicted. Since the woman had no identification on or near her, detectives initially worried that identifying her would be a painstaking task on its own. When fingerprints were taken from her body and run through the system, however, a match immediately came back. The body belonged to 19-year-old Jacqueline Michelle Graham. Had she not been arrested on drug charges in 1986, identifying the badly and brutally disfigured woman would have, perhaps, taken up a great deal of the investigating officer's time. Instead, it took mere hours. Detectives immediately began tracking down family and friends and tracing Jacqueline's movements in search of leads. She was spotted by at least one witness sitting on a bridge abutment where West Little York Road and Highway 6 meet, not far from the 6th Avenue Club, at around 2:20 a.m. Jacqueline was by herself there, the witness reported. It's not clear why she was sitting on the bridge abutment. It is walking distance from the club. On Saturday, April 9th, 1988, a utility worker noticed a shoe and a shred of nylon pantyhose splattered with blood about a mile from where Jacqueline's body was found, near the intersection of Telge and West Road. A large amount of blood discovered on the ground there made it evident to investigators that the young woman's fatal injuries were inflicted there. Slightly nearer to the 6th Avenue Club where Jacqueline was last seen, on U.S. Highway 290 and West Little York Road, pantyhose, high heel shoes, and a bloody skirt were found in a service station dumpster.
We're talking about someone who, whether it be through a fit of rage or whether it was a methodical execution, brutally committed a homicide that we consider to be very grotesque.
Harris County Homicide Lieutenant Drew Warren said, suggesting that the overkill inflicted upon Jacqueline Graham made the slaying appear personal. He theorized that her killer was someone who she'd had a close relationship with. Detectives attended Jacqueline's funeral, scrutinizing the actions and body language of those in attendance and taking notes. Investigators spoke with and questioned multiple individuals almost immediately upon Jacqueline's body being identified. Friends, people who might have been with her or seen her the night before, and her ex-boyfriend, Joseph. Though all were released after questioning without being charged, Joseph would be interviewed several more times. Jacqueline's mother, Pam, refused to comment about her daughter and Joseph's relationship. At least one investigator became consumed with the idea that the estranged boyfriend killed Jacqueline Graham. When Harris County Homicide Detective Marcel Dion got word that the body of a young woman had been found, not long after it had, he got to work right away. Upon identification of the body and after contacting friends and family for questioning, Detective Dion spoke with then 23-year-old Joseph. The investigator was curious about the argument they'd had at the 6th Avenue Club the night before.
"So what if we had fights? Everybody does,"
Joseph later told the Houston Chronicle.
"Why would I want to kill my girlfriend? I loved her. We were a team."
Joseph told Detective Dion that the argument he and Jacqueline had that night was caused by jealousy, presumably meaning on his part, and wasn't something that was very important. Joseph said that he'd been calling friends all day looking for Jacqueline, even before her body had been discovered. But Dion had a gut feeling, he said, that he couldn't shake. It was to the point that his nights were restless, his mind racing to find the piece of the puzzle he'd missed. Some colleagues agreed with Detective Dion, but others weren't so sure. Harris County Sheriff's Office Sergeant John Gessner said of Joseph's alibi,
"You can't be that consistent. You can't play with fire for that long and not get burned."
Sergeant Gessner pointed out that Joseph's alibi, and the details therein, never changed. though Detective Dion insists that, quote, the anger that was demonstrated against her indicated it was someone who had cared about her. Sergeant Gessner theorized that it could have just as well been a random slaying by a depraved maniac. Perhaps Sergeant Gessner considered the manner in which Jacqueline's body had been dumped out in the open. No attempts to conceal her or make her presentable were made, something that is often found when a person is murdered by someone close to or intimate with them. Regardless of the opinions of detectives either way, no evidence could be found to use against Joseph, who said of Detective Dion, "I hate him." He was constantly harassed by investigators, watched all the time, Joseph said, even after submitting to multiple polygraph examinations, all of which, authorities said, produced inconclusive results. Joseph said the detectives who hounded him even called him the Slasher. He was a waiter at a Houston restaurant, and police would come in and request to sit in his area as an intimidation tactic, Joseph claimed, once even handcuffing him at his place of employment to take him in for questioning, though he wasn't under arrest. Joseph was given the title Prime Suspect, but since nothing linking him to Jacqueline's horrific murder was ever obtained, perhaps that title is fairly presumptuous of law enforcement, as it's understood that the man's person and vehicle were inspected for evidence. It's impossible to understand how and why the slaying of Jacqueline Graham only garnered a passing glance from Houston media. The gruesome nature of the crime and the depraved overkill by the perpetrator rivals Houston's most infamous cases, the Icebox murders, the Orchard Apartment murders, and the city's Lover's Lane murders, to name a few. Perhaps it's partly due to Jacqueline's parents' media silence after the initial few articles were released. To this day, they decline to speak with the press because the memories are, Jacqueline's mother says, too painful.
"I don't understand what happened," she said in 1988. "I don't understand how someone could do something like that."
Whatever the reason for the lack of press, little is known about the specifics of Jacqueline's murder and if the police ever pursued any other suspects with the vigor and diligence in which they pursued Joseph. In 2007, in an attempt to reopen and reinvigorate Jacqueline's case, her bloody clothing was sent to crime labs in hope of obtaining the DNA profile of her killer. Nothing, however, was found. The savage and depraved nature of Jacqueline Michelle Graham's murder haunted both initial investigators and detectives who dusted off the cold case file in the years following.
"I've been dealing with death cases for 17 to 18 years, and it's the worst one I've ever seen,"
said Sergeant Dean Holtke of the Harris County Sheriff's Office to a Houston news station after reviewing the case in 2011. In 2018, Harris County Sheriff's Office cold case investigator, Sergeant Abraham Alanis, told Houston's ABC 13,
"There was a lot of anger there. I've been in homicide 8 years, and I've worked a lot of cases, a lot of gruesome cases. Looking at this one's bad. We're just hoping for that one lead that's going to open the case back up."
If you have any information about the murder of Jacqueline Michelle Graham, please call Houston Area Crime Stoppers at 713-222-8477. The Houston Chronicle, the Victoria Advocate, the McAllen Monitor, and ABC 13 Houston were used as sources for this episode. Here's a trailer for the podcast Sooner State True Crime. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Hey, Gone Cold listeners. Cece here, the host of the Sooner State True Crime Podcast. We focus on cases based in my wonderful home state of Oklahoma. And since the term Sooner actually refers to the state's very first true crime, cheaters in the land run, Oklahoma is definitely a crime state. Sooner State True Crime can be found in most podcast apps, or visit our website anchor.fm/crimestate. New episodes are released twice a month. Follow us on Twitter at Crime State for upcoming episodes and more. So come away with me and discover my crime state on the Sooner State True Crime Podcast.